literally just went through like every single Facebook picture that I've had on there since 2009. We made it all the way back to 2009. Find that picture I was talking about. Welcome back to the game. John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner all with you here. You Can't Be Serious, going to wrap things up at 5:50. We'll close up the poll in the next segment at 5:40. So vote on it right now. Who are you rooting for in the Sweet 16? Who are you pulling for the most with the Cats out of it? Going to be Purdue, South Carolina, or other? Let us know. JL Kurtz, the game KMAN. You can find it on Twitter there. You can also give us a call, 537-1350, or tweet us, the game KMAN, if you have questions or comments along the way.
We could also throw in...
You want to get the World Baseball Classic in?
I thought that we had talked about sharing a couple takes from it.
Around college basketball is coming up here in a second. All right, fine. At 5:40 after the poll results,
okay,
I'll let you get off the hot World Baseball Classic takes.
All right, sounds good.
Hot takes about the WBC, but first we go around college hoops.
And now for a look around college basketball.
Bobby Knight just threw his chair clear across the free throw lane for Luke Manish. A three.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Kansas State heads to the Elite Eight.
This is Around College Basketball.
Four Sweet 16 games start tonight, or are going to be played tonight. The action starts with Michigan and Oregon just after 6 o'clock in the Sprint Center, Kansas City. The other early session game is West Virginia and Gonzaga, 639 TBS in San Jose.
It, to me, for obvious reasons, I think West Virginia-Gonzaga is the one that I look forward to a lot more in the early window here, just because I think West Virginia's got a great chance. You heard me pick them earlier to win that game. I love watching West Virginia play against other teams. Like, we see them in the Big 12. It's fun enough to watch that style. I think it's particularly interesting to see them play other teams that are not used to seeing it a couple times a year, just with how much they throw out the pressure with the press Virginia thing. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. I will say this, too, about Michigan and Oregon. Really fun styles to watch.
Yes.
Michigan and Oregon, really, really fun to watch, especially the way Michigan's shooting the ball.
Yeah, West Virginia and Gonzaga is probably the more significant game as far as the outcome of the tournament is concerned. But if you just want to watch 40 minutes of really fun basketball, I think Michigan and Oregon is probably the best game of the night.
Yeah, I can get down with that. I mean, Oregon has been a pretty high-scoring outfit under Dan Altman when they've had success. They're one of those teams, too, that I wish I had watched more, but they're on the West Coast, and it just you have to go more out of your way, it feels like, to see them play. So I have not watched them.
They shouldn't have beat Rhode Island. I had Rhode Island in my Sweet 16, and Rhode Island had that game. Things did not go well down the stretch.
The stat ESPN's been thrown out about Michigan to prove the point about just how fun it would be to watch. In the tournament, they are 89% on uncontested shots. Now, I don't know who's going through and charting that and what's an uncontested shot and what's not, because that's kind of up to interpretation. But either way, that's a pretty ridiculous number, 89%.
And then the nightcap tonight features the Jayhawks and Boilermakers. That's at 8:40. Xavier and Arizona, 9 o'clock. Xavier is the only double-digit seed that has made it to the second weekend.
Well, your boy Landon Lucas is going to outscore Swanigan and Haas in this one, I think is what's going to happen there.
I don't think so. I don't, man.
And that, I was teeing you up to hate on Landon Lucas because you were doing it earlier.
He's not good. He's been really good in his career in the NCAA tournament for some reason, but at least in the context of most KU big men, you know, comparing him to a Thomas Robinson or Jeff Withey or Cole Aldrich or something like that, get Landon Lucas all the way out of here.
So you don't think he can hold his own against a Big Ten Player of the Year and a 7'2" guy?
Maybe with some officials' help.
Oh, okay.
In Sprint Center and Allen Fieldhouse East.
Okay.
We'll see.
It honestly will be intriguing to see how Kansas is able to handle those two bigs. Because, like, Caleb Swanigan, halfway through the year, I did not really know anything about him. I happened to catch some of his story. Like, he had a pretty rough upbringing, and a guy took him in and helped. I don't know if it was a foster situation or what, but kind of helped get him on his feet, and he's now turned into Big Ten Player of the Year, candidate for National Player of the Year. There's a lot of storylines here. KU's been missing a rim protector. They've got not only Swanigan, but a 7'2" guy. You got two National Player of the Year candidates in Mason and Swanigan going up against each other. It's in Kansas City, like you said. Yeah, that should be a fun game. Another point that I'll make here about the other game, Xavier-Arizona. Xavier is one of those teams that, to me, proves just how much coach is judged on tournament success and why that matters so much more in the regular season. We talked about that yesterday. But Xavier lost 6 of their last 7 to teams not named DePaul. DePaul had 2 wins in the league. They were 2-19. They played DePaul back-to-back in the conference tournament in their last regular season game. To anybody with a pulse, they lost 6 of their last 7. Everyone thought they were fading. Now they've turned it on. They've won a couple games. And people think that Chris Mack is going to go take the Indiana job. Like, tournament success. It's what it's all about. Like it or not, that's how coaches are measured.
All right, guys, a major coaching job opened up today. Georgetown parted ways with John Thompson III, who had coached the Hoyas since 2004. Georgetown has missed the NCAA tournament the last 2 seasons.
Surprising. They obviously seem like a good fit because of his father in Georgetown, and I just had never really thought of John Thompson III being anywhere else. But Georgetown does feel like it has slipped out of basketball relevancy rather quickly, which is it's surprising because I actually went and looked up today his Wikipedia page and like what he had done season by season. I was surprised that there's more success there than I really had remembered and thought for Georgetown. I just always think of them being high seed in the tournament, get bounced really early. They got beat by Gulf Coast, you know, a couple of years ago when Gulf Coast made that big run. But they've actually had a lot of success. So I'm sure it's a combination of things getting stale with him. He had been there for so long in the last 2 years and not gone well. And maybe some of those early exits. So, you know, we see how these things happen. We're experiencing some of it in Manhattan here, where after, you know, a while, people get really restless with things. I guess it doesn't surprise me in that regard, but just thinking about one being without the other seems like a weird deal.
Yeah, and I think that something else that has hurt Georgetown as far as their relevance that you were talking about, the Big East isn't what the Big East was before conference expansion. The Big East is now kind of playing second fiddle to all of the other Power 5 conferences. So that didn't used to be the case, and Georgetown was a player in a conference that was a player. And, it was probably time for them to move on.
All right, could Oklahoma State be on the verge of hiring a new coach? Pat Kelsey, who was Winthrop's coach until 2 days ago when he accepted the job at UMass, is apparently no longer at UMass. There are 2 theories with where he might be headed, but one of them is Stillwater.
As I said earlier, I just feel like this would be Oklahoma State throwing at a dartboard on a mid-major coach here because they got left so late in the game and at a bad time by Brad Underwood. Winthrop is one of those places that has churned out some good coaches, obviously including Greg Marshall would be at the top of that list, so it's not the worst idea in the world. But I don't know that this is going to be the type of hire, if it is Oklahoma State, that gets people really excited. They've had such an attendance problem outside of last year, and even then it seemed like it took a little while to get going. I don't know that this is something that will really galvanize the fan base. That's not necessarily a criticism because I don't know what other options you have other than, I mean, Doug Gottlieb seems to be the one that I guess would get people excited, but that's so much more high risk, high reward.
Yeah, it's, it's not great because this guy had taken the UMass job at a time when, you know, Cal is open, Washington is open, and he was not in the running for any of those jobs, so you get the feeling that UMass had thought that, you know, he wasn't, or he was going to be a real candidate that they could actually bring in. I really don't know. We don't know what Mike Holder's going to do because he's clearly made some very questionable decisions as Oklahoma State's AD the last couple of years.
Let me put it to you this way. Last year, when Jamie Dixon went to TCU, we all were like, whoa, Big 12's getting better. Coaches here are getting better. Brad Underwood goes to Oklahoma State. You're like, man, people are not messing around in the Big 12. Look at all these great coaches. Pat Kelsey's not going to do that same thing right here to Oklahoma State. It's not going to really send shockwaves through the rest of the
probably league. Lesser than even like Chris Beard was at Texas Tech last year, and there wasn't a whole lot of fanfare around him either.
I would say less. Yeah. I would say it's lower on the scale of excitement than Chris Beard was.
All right, guys. Finally, in addition to the 3 Big 12 schools that are in the Sweet 16, there is one other team that is still playing basketball. TCU beat Richmond last night to get into, actually this was 2 nights ago, in the NIT semifinals. The Horned Frogs are they're off to the Big Apple to play in the world's most famous arena, 4 Pennsylvania Plaza, Madison Square Garden.
I had legitimately no idea TCU was still alive in the NIT until someone texted me last night, just out of the clear blue sky, about like, hey, how about TCU making the NIT Final Four? I was like, yeah, I had no idea. I can remember when K-State played the NIT under Huggins, like being, even though I was disappointed, so disappointed about the NCAA tournament, being like, yeah, this is still cool, like the NIT is a thing. Now I've come full circle and I understand. It just, hey, good for TCU. I mean, that's nice. They're the type of team that can, I think, really benefit from this if you want, like, a real legitimate take. But the biggest take I have is I've now fully realized how dumb I was at the time for being, like, really excited about the NIT.
How many of the NIT Final Four can you name?
Right now?
Yeah.
Like, this year?
Yep. TCU, that's it?
An 8 seed made it.
Yes, they did.
Kellis tweeted it earlier today.
It was.
But,
CSU Bakersfield. Also, UCF beat Illinois last night, so that officially starts Brad Underwood's tenure at Illinois as Illinois season is over. And then Georgia Tech is the other one. So it'll be TCU and Georgia Tech in one semifinal and UCF and Cal State Bakersfield in the other.
Not great. Get your popcorn, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a wild ride of NIT semifinal hoops. Like Georgia Tech's there like every other year. It seemed like one of those made for the NIT since they've fallen off here in recent years. That'll do it for Around College Basketball. You Can't Be Serious at 550. Final results of the poll question, who people are rooting for in the Sweet 16. Plus, red, scorching hot, World Baseball Classic takes when we come back here.